Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here. Another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Morose. Max Fontana, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty well.
And our guest today, for a record tying, third time, of founder of Clinical Athlete, your... what place finisher? No, we won't bring that up. The best physical therapist in the 81-kilo session at the American Open Finals, Dr. Quinn Hennock. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing well, man.
What session
Thanks
was
for
it?
Having me on. The D session.
Okay.
To be fair, I requested a lower entry total so that I would lift on a Friday night instead of a Saturday morning, but there's possibility that I would have been in the C session.
Okay.
Is basically the A session, if you round up.
You could hit the town in Milwaukee?
I just got to get the hell out of there.
Okay. Well.
Sorry for any Milwaukee listeners.
Milwaukeeans. Milwaukee. So what's new in the world of Clinical Athlete these days?
Oh, man. We're doing lots of stuff. We're going to build a bunch of online courses for CEUs that professionals can, like, earn their licensure wearing their PJs and listening to me talk about tendinopathy and rehab and pain, like, and all sorts of other stuff.
Online, like a University of Phoenix Clinical Athlete?
Exactly. Okay. That's exactly right. With less quality. still doing our seminars and the forum, just trying to educate the field. It's been good, though. It's been a lot of fun.
And the people on the Clinical Athlete Forum, it is by practitioners for practitioners, yes?
Yeah.
Like, so I, as a civilian,
actually
would not be allowed in such a place?
Well, you as a coach would.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, so the idea is that we're taking the worlds of performance and rehab and sports med, and we're trying to kind of bridge that gap a little bit. So coaches are in there talking, because healthcare professional is going to take an athlete and pass them over to the coach, and that's going to be vice versa. So now, if you didn't have your extraordinary amount of knowledge,
I don't have any letters after my name. Is
that's
that problematic?
Fine. You can make your own letter. Okay. CWS is your certification. JTS. JTS. CWS. JTS.
Just put half of your last name. It looks like a bunch of letters. SM. Chad Wesley, SMT. Kind of, yeah, fake it.
SM dot.
And if you put a D in there, we know what that means.
Doctor? Dentist.
Yes.
Dentist.
So for people not familiar, if you don't know Quinn and what Clinical Athlete is, why don't you give a quick story of why you wanted to create this?
Yeah, so Clinical Athlete is a few things. So it's a directory of healthcare providers who we'd like to say have a better understanding of the management of athletes. And so they walk the walk. These are healthcare PTs, athletic trainers, physicians who are athletes themselves, understand sports med, not just, you know, take 2 weeks off or find a new hobby. So we wanted to get those types of practitioners in one place so that the public could find them. And so clinicalathlete.com, you see a map of providers there, and it's a directory for athletes to go to and find somebody that they trust. And we vet all the people that come in. So you have to apply to be on the directory, and then you have to get put into our forum first, where you're required to actually talk and discuss ideas. So you don't just get put on the directory. So that
like
filter...
a battle royale of
yeah, behind closed doors. That's right. Yeah. We beat them down and then build them back up, and then they're put on the directory. And then we have a forum, which is coaches, healthcare professionals, and students in the same field, and we're just trying to pump as much education to them as possible. So it's like educators educating professionals. It's good.
Yeah, you guys are talking about new research with each other and reviewing literature, all that stuff.
Totally.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good.
I mean, the idea is to keep everybody up to date. You know, if you guys have probably been to a professional who's just, they're comfortable knowing what they knew 25 years ago, and nothing's changed because they don't necessarily have to, but if you've got somebody who's...
Yeah, it's like most of the USAW Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Exactly. So if you've ever got somebody, or all the way down to a coach who has not changed their approach in the last 5 years, and you know, that's, to me, that's a red flag. You need to, as your new information comes in, you learn more, you should evolve your philosophies and your thought process.
So if somebody is like, let's just say, regular athlete, they're doing their stuff, and they want to benefit from what you provide, where would you recommend the first place, the first thing they go do? What like to immediately get some access to it?
This is just an athlete.
Somebody who wants to use what you've got, what you guys have created to sort of benefit from.
Yeah, I mean, well, if they want to find somebody, they could just check the directory. So if they want to actually find a clinician or a coach, so anybody that goes to our clinical athlete weightlifting certifications are on kind of listed as well. So they can find a practitioner on the website, number one. And then number two, you know, the forum is open to anyone. I think if you're just an athlete, you have to actually care about learning about the field, which is totally fine. We would allow that.
Right.
If you're not, if you're one of those athletes who just like, just tell me what to do, coach, and give me the program, then you're probably not going to benefit because it's information for you to be able to instill either in yourself or if you're going to be a coach at some point.
Are you the best weightlifter of the clinical athletes?
What define best?
Highest total.
No.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, we got some strong guys in there, but they're bigger. I think that I would possibly win the Sinclair, even though that's not a thing anymore. I don't do Roby.
So what are your Robies?
I don't know what that is. Who's Roby?
How many rubles do you have?
I have 700. That'd be a good one, right? Good score?
That'd be a very good Roby, yeah.
Well, there you go.
Much higher than your actual Roby, I'm sure. But Clinical Athlete is, I do his Instagram Q&As and stuff. People always ask questions. Probably my most tagged resource, and I'm sure you see those at Quinn Hannock DPT and at Clinical Athlete, because everyone trying to ask me rehab questions, and that's not my field. So if you're an athlete, you're struggling, you're something certain, check out Clinical Athlete for sure. And when they do ask about rehab, I give them this very Quinn-esque answer that frustrates them to no end. When I tell them that they've exceeded their tissue's ability to adapt to its stressors.
People don't like hearing that.
They do not enjoy it. But that's what we want to talk about today, because the way that you think about exercise as it relates to rehab and injury and everything is obviously great, and that's why we have you on here. So this very frustrating answer, explain yourself.
So every injury ever is load greater than capacity or force greater than capacity, however you want to word that. I mean, think about it. If it's Adrian Peterson taking a helmet to the knee and tearing his ACL, the force going through the kneecap was beyond the ACL tissue's tolerance or ability to absorb and adapt to the stressor. That goes for acute things that happen in the moment, like that example, or over time, chronically kind of overloading beyond your ability to recover from the stressor. So we end up de-adapting. And that's every injury ever. If you think about it, all falls under that bucket. So, but what people try to do is they think, I am experiencing pain. There must be something wrong inherently with this system. Either something, a muscle is not firing, or I'm missing.
Classic.
Glute amnesia.
Gluteal
Tiger Woods.
Amnesia.
For 5 years, Tiger Woods didn't have glutes, apparently. That's what he said.
I find that hard to believe.
So it's like, muscles don't fire. Joints don't have range of motion. So I'm missing 5 degrees of internal rotation of my hip. That's why my hip hurts. Yeah. But if you take a step back, it's, no, actually, you were increasing your intensity 30% from week to week, and you haven't taken a deload in 3 months, and your stress bucket is overflowing, period. I always say, like, when people throw out those things, oh, this not firing or this joint's not working, maybe I lack mobility in this shoulder. How long have you been experiencing this? Oh, like 3 months. How old are you? 30. So something magical happened to your body in the last 3 months where all of a sudden you don't have that issue. It's like, no, talk to me about your training leading up. Oh, I was peaking for a meet. Oh, I started a new program. I switched coaches. I got a new job, so I stopped sleeping. I was training just as much. So injuries are about stress and stress management and load management. All the other stuff, we're optimizing technique and position always. And that stuff can have an effect on pain experience because we're distributing forces differently if you change positions. And so we're always doing that to try to optimize leverage. But if you don't address the program, the main stressor that you're subjecting your body to, then none of that stuff matters. So people think of that concept like separate from training, but MRV, MEV, all these concepts that we talk about with performance are 100% relevant to rehab as well.
So what about like your MIV, your maximum injurable volume?
Interesting. Yeah. Maybe that's like a step above
maximum
MRV.
Injurable volume.
Maybe just
that's
past
like
the
red line. Yeah.
You can become as injured as possible.
Right.
If you exceed that, you die, right?
Yes, you die.
Instant death syndrome. Yeah. It can happen any moment.
Instead of talk about like why do people hate that answer so much? I think it's because things change so much. Like everything's very fluid. So people always compare themselves where they are now to where they used to be. Mm. And so like one of the most common things, the rebuttal to that, well, you exceeded your tissue's tolerance. What? This is a weight that I've done 1,000 times. It doesn't matter what you've done in the past. You can only compare yourself to you now.
I guess you should have only done 999
yeah,
times.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, let's take into account all of the different factors that are going into your life right now that can add to stress or reduce your recoverability. And some of that's just getting older, you know? So if like the same person with all other variables the same as you get older, your recoverable volume starts to decrease just a little bit, or your frequency, your ability to handle frequency changes. So, you know, all those things can have a factor in injury, and people tend to not address that. Because we want to train and we're athletes and we don't want to say that we're doing too much because we all want to be Wolverine. And then we try to cover it up with all these passive modalities or these drills that are they're good. I prescribe lots of little low-level drills and floor exercises and stuff like that. But that's not magic if you're just hammering yourself in the gym. So that's, go ahead.
So do you think that being that, there, you know, these injuries are all caused by lack of capacity that's not enough to survive the...
It's preparation. Right. It's a prep issue.
Then what would the solution be once somebody has become injured?
Yeah. What sucks now is it's all retroactive, meaning we don't know it was an issue until you start to experience the issues, and then we kind of have to backtrack a little bit. But put very simply, if we can nail down the amount of work that they were doing, let's say 6 to 8 weeks leading up to the issue, and we've deemed the issue was just a concentrated amount of work, it was too much too soon, and it just kind of accumulated, because we know training accumulates. It's not one session that does you in, it's the accumulation over weeks. So we say, okay, in this 6 weeks, we find the rate of intensity or training volume that you were just building from week to week. And we say, well, if we took that exact amount of work, but spread it out over the course of maybe another block, so your end goal is the same. You still reach the end point, but it's over a more broad period of time, so that increase, that slope is not as steep. A lot of times that by itself can be a solution.
Right.
It's the same work, it's just less concentrated. So you have more time to adapt. So that's one very, very simple solution. We run the exact same block, and we just spread it out over a longer period of time.
Right.
So we could say that in that period of time, you exceeded your MRV, and we know that because you started to experience pain.
Do you find that like if somebody has like a soft tissue injury, like they tear a hamstring or something?
Load greater than capacity.
Right. That, let's say we follow that process with them afterwards. So injury, they did, let's just say whatever, you know, 10 units of training before that. Then afterward, you spread that 10 units of training out, you try to get them beyond that capacity later, or do you find that you...
You definitely do.
Yeah. What's the conversion rate of units of training to shroot bucks?
The same as Robies to...
To what?
Stanley Nichols?
Stanley Nichols, yeah. 40 Stanley Nichols will get you on the Olympic team. So is the goal is...
The answer is yes. We're always trying to increase capacity. Always.
Do you find that there is like a point at which like, okay, you know, this guy's just, someone continues to get hurt at that point. It's just like, hey, you have to tell him like, this is the end of your athletic career. Because you're just going to get, hit MIV. Yeah. You're at maximum injurable volume.
I feel like I've heard you tell several athletes that this is the end of your athletic career.
Okay.
Injury aside.
Okay. That's psychological MRV. Okay. You have to push people until they break and then cry.
Exactly.
How are you going to get results out of somebody if they're not upset?
So the answer is, if they want to continue doing the thing, then I try to help them as much as possible. But what does suck is we are trying to avoid the recurring thing. Because every time that you have a recurrence of the same injury, you're more susceptible to it in the future. We
Do you
don't
think
really
that
know
lowers MIV,
yeah.
where they basically get hurt,
for
they're
sure.
going to get hurt easier next time?
Yeah, think about anything that you've had recurrent. It takes less and less for it to come back.
What if you had like a hernia, and would you get more if like just keep getting more and more of them until like Swiss cheese body? There's hernias everywhere, is that possible?
I guess
asking for a friend.
Well, if it was uniform enough, then it becomes protective.
Oh.
It's all about symmetry.
So, I know we all have goals to hit, whether it's eating healthier or exercising more, and sometimes it can be hard to achieve all these goals while struggling with other aspects of life. There's an app that I highly recommend to help you hit those goals a bit easier. It's called Blinkist. Blinkist is the only app that takes the best key takeaways, the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, and condenses them down into just 15 minutes so you can read or listen to them. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get the main points of books quickly without reading the entire book. With the audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish 4 books a day just while you're on the go. 8 million people use Blinkist right now, and it has a massive and growing library for self-help, business, health, to history books. I like Blinkist because just while I'm cooking breakfast or something, I can get 15 minutes quick information in. Maybe I'm just driving around running errands. And so it's so easy to enhance your day, enhance your knowledge in short bursts throughout the day. I've read 7 Habits of Highly Effective People on there, one of my favorites. They got tons of health and nutrition books like Sleep Revolution on there. So right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer for our Jug Life audience. Go to Blinkist.com/JugLife to start your 7-day free trial. That's Blinkist, B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/JugLife to start your 7-day free trial. Blinkist.com/JugLife.
Do nothing to maintain your fitness. You decondition. You might stop experiencing the pain. That doesn't mean that your tissues are ready to handle the stress again. And what do people do? They jump right back into the program that they were doing before, maybe even faster, trying to make up for lost time. And then that's that recurring cycle. And we just kind of like, it's that spin cycle where we get, woe is me. You know, it's like, what's wrong with me? Every time I come back to training, I get hurt. And it's because they build too fast, but then they also don't build up enough to get to where they wanted to be, you know, initially and past that.
I think so many people, when they get injured, and I've had this problem myself, is in the moment of injury, when you can't do what you want to do, it seems like it takes forever.
Yeah.
But like, so when I had herniated discs, and
probably still do, by the way.
Yeah.
You probably do too.
Yeah. So when that occurred and I couldn't lift heavy the way that I wanted to, I ended up taking about 6 months to return to what I would have considered like real training. But in that 6 months prior, it was the progression of breathing drills, because that's all I could do for the first week or two. And then, you know, bodyweight squats, then goblet squats, then high bar and front squats with, you know, I think 185 back squat, 135 front squat.
Oh man, we could have shared a bar.
Yeah. I was doing sets
He's
of 10.
He's taller than
I
you.
Don't know.
He's taller.
Yeah. And at the time it was like, man, this is just fucking boring to do. But then looking back at it, you know, now five years later, it's just a memory. Like it was so quick.
Yeah.
And it's so hard for people to see that delayed gratification or whatever, to know that even, you know, taking a month a year from now, that
it's
month
a drop
will
in
seem
the bucket,
like nothing.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And waiting that extra week to know you're ready to go, man, it can make such a big difference, rather than let me get back a week early and it was a week too early. So now it's a whole another month, and or another 2 months or whatever it is. And that's, you know, such, listen to that. Like, take the extra week. Know that it's not a huge deal in the grand scheme of your training career.
Well, and we haven't even talked about, you're kind of getting into the psychosocial aspect of pain, which is very powerful. Like, most people just think of the bio aspect. It's like, oh, pain, the amount of pain that I feel equals the amount of damage that's done. And that's actually not the case. It's very much so not a correlative. So the amount of pain that you experience is not strongly correlated to the amount of damage that's done. So you can have disc herniations that are asymptomatic. You can have rotator cuff tears, hip labral tears. Whether or not they're going to become symptomatic, they may increase your risk of experiencing symptoms down the line, but there's not that one-to-one. So that's what another thing that people don't understand. If you're experiencing pain, that doesn't mean that something is broken or snapped or crackled or popped. If you're no longer experiencing pain from an injury, that doesn't mean that the tissues are strong enough to withstand the stressor. But in your example, you come back, let's say you come back a week or two too early, and you have a recurrence. Every time that happens, and correct me if I'm wrong, if in your experience, but it starts to fuck with you mentally.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And so now you condition a fear response, a fear avoidance to the movement, and that can perpetuate the experience of pain. It's very much connected in that way. Your perception of pain and the actual local area, it starts to become blurred.
Is that what people mean when they say it hit me right in the feels?
Yeah.
What if, like...
I've never heard that
term.
Oh, I don't know what kind of work you guys are doing.
Yeah, hit me in the feels. Yeah, that's it.
People then become...
You can use that one at your next, seminar.
I know it's hitting you in the feels, but...
People then become basically attached to the pain as a characteristic of their personality, right?
It sounds stupid, but it can go like that.
They name it or something,
yeah,
right?
I've had those conversations with people, and I'll say, you know, like, at this point it sucks. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, you now see yourself as that guy, right? Yeah. Oh, I'm just the guy, like, I have a bad back. I'm just the guy with the bad knee, you know? Or, you know, if you look at your training program for the next week, you know, it's got a lot of squats. Oh, man. Knees are really going to suck after this. And it's like, that sucks. Like, that's a bad place to be.
And it becomes like self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, totally. And that's the complexity of the pain experience. The pain is just a conscious perception. We don't actually have pain receptors. Our body sends signals to our brain. It's our brain's job to interpret.
So pain is just totally in your mind.
If you don't have, if you cut your head off, then you're not going to experience the pain. It's a sensory experience.
Duh, Quinn.
Well, that's it. But when injuries are more acute, like when they first happen in the moment, it is more accurate. The pain experience is more accurate to what's happening. Like, I sprained my ankle, it blows up like a grapefruit. It's probably going to hurt to some extent. But on the flip side, I've had patients who've broken their leg and it didn't hurt until they looked down on it and saw it mangled. And then that's when they said they experienced the pain. So it works that way too.
That's almost like little kids. Like a 2-year-old, and he's running along and he falls.
Yeah.
If his parents freak out, then the kid starts crying. But if the parents are like, hey, but you know, just keep going, then
that happened to
the kid doesn't know the difference.
Asher a couple years ago, and he fell off that thing, and he was walking up to the garage. And his hand is like backwards, like this. And he's like, he says, Mom, I hurt my hand, I think. Had no idea. And he might have been in shock, but like, it was like,
sure.
Okay, hold on a second.
Yeah, you might have done something.
Let's go.
So, and then it's like, humans do that. When we get older too, we start to think through things and we have emotions. And like, have you ever seen a 3-legged dog? They're happy as can be.
Right.
They don't give a shit. Or like, I had a friend whose dog tore her ACL. The dog tore her ACL. She was limping around for a couple months, and then it healed up, and she was running around happy as can be. But we don't do that. We kind of get down in the dumps, so it's like being hurt sucks. But back to the kind of conversation at hand, if you don't manage your training and you keep perpetually in that cycle, that's what happens. And we start to get into that, like, years of the same type of pain. It's, from my perspective, it's so much more difficult. My conversations at that point, for somebody who's been in the same type of discomfort for 3, 5, 10 years, shifts from, well, let me look at that specific area and make sure everything's still attached, to let me talk to you about the pain experience. It becomes more of an education, and over time reiterating the fact that you're actually not as broken as you think you are. Your experience is kind of conditioned over the years, without saying you are making it up, because they're not. Pain is very real. The experience is very real, but it's much less to do with any local tissue damage at that point. We were trying to get away. We're trying not to go there, right? But so if we can manage something and figure out where in their training they overflowed their bucket, then we can modify the stress load right then and there, and they can get past that without having those recurrences.
Do you think, so that's kind of interesting, because you talk about, I forgot what I was going to say.
Chad, go. Yeah. It's fine.
So in regards to exercise progression and regression, did you get it back?
No. Right. I lost it.
Are there some kind of guiding principles that you could share with the audience as they think about maybe rehabbing their own injuries, ways to progress and regress exercises?
Yeah, so you've got lots of variables at your disposal. And I usually break it down like, I break it down, I call them tiers, but it's really just priority. Like, what's going to give you the most bang for the buck in regards to managing the injury, but also maintaining a training stimulus, because that's the most important thing, right? The biggest one and the most obvious one, and the people are like, well, duh, but they never fucking do it, is go lighter. So intensity, if you think about it, intensity is a thing that can put somebody to their limit the fastest. You can always just load up the bar heavier than they can lift. Mm. Or you can load it up heavier than they can recover from over and over and over, and then something goes, right? So like,
and this would go to the effect too of like, I feel like I've heard you talk about intensity tolerance and volume tolerance.
Yeah, exactly. So let's say somebody's back squatting. Their issue is knee pain with back squats. It's triggered with back squats every single time. It's mechanical, but it only happens at like 90%. So common sense and what I would recommend is you get your work under that intensity threshold, but just under it. It doesn't mean that you have to go just bar 40%, mm-hmm. like 85% if that's pain-free.
Just the bar is 40% for you?
Huh? Oh. That's, well, 45%. You know, have you seen these legs? so that's an intensity threshold. Get your work just under that. It would be the same with technique. Like if somebody's just horrifically butchering their snatches over and over and over at a certain intensity, how about we drop it down a little bit? Like injuries are exactly the same. A volume threshold. So my workout today is, you know, 10 by 10 back squats, and I really only feel my issue at set number 8. It's like, okay, well, you actually have a lot of capacity, but that is a capacity issue. So let's chop up that volume a little bit, maybe spread it out over the course of the week. Mm-hmm. So those are so simple. Those solutions are so simple, but people don't do them. So a lot of times the buck stops there. Like if people just tweak their intensities and volumes a little bit, even over the course of a couple weeks, they tend to get past their issues. Beyond that, exercise variation that we kind of already talked about just changes leverages. So the forces that are distributed, and I don't try to complicate it any more than that. Low bar squat versus a safety bar squat just changes force distributions, and the same tissues are not being loaded in the same way. And sometimes that's enough to take some heat off of the sensitized area, but you're still getting the training response. So you're still getting heavy weight. Mm. It's not as specific to the movement that you're looking for, but it's way more specific than some of the other stuff that you would get. The other thing is position. So in the back squat, we can manipulate, if we're talking like hip, low back, we can manipulate pelvic tilt. Somebody's super hard arching, or they're starting to actually go into flexion a little bit, we can mess around with their trunk position and see if that helps to desensitize or redistribute forces. Shin angle. Front squats versus back squats. Sometimes the shin angle can have an effect on the knee. So, and I've seen it go both ways. Most people will be like, well, you would want a more vertical shin if your knee is hurting. I've seen it go where people actually feel better if they drive their knees forward because they start burning out their quad. So I actually just tell them to experiment with shin angle. Foot, so we're still talking squat, stance. Toe in, toe out, wide, narrow. We start to play around with these positions a little bit to see, because most of these injuries are more of just kind of like overuse type deals and not necessarily acute. Something needs to rest and heal back.
Weightlifting and powerlifting specifically, do you feel that it's more common to see like chronic injuries that are stemming from the fact that people have so little variation sometimes that maybe they're, or maybe that it's, yeah, maybe just yeah. so little variation?
Yeah, I mean, that's what cyclic loading does, and cyclic loading being this loading, the same loading patterns over and over and over. But I don't want to demonize that because we know specificity is like king when it comes to performance. So there's a balance there. But for sure, if you keep loading the connective tissue the same exact way over and over, you're probably increasing your risk of sensitizing those tissues to that exact pattern. And something as simple as just having a variation block,
right?
Loading the tissues differently, because we know that the tendons are, when you do a squat, your patellar tendon is not loaded uniformly all the way through. It's different. It's loaded a little differently during that movement versus this movement versus heavier load and lighter loads. the impulse of the movement's different. So tempo is another variation.
Right.
Sometimes a squat will give you problems if you're just slamming the bottom, but if you go really slow on the way up, really slow on the way down, then you can tolerate it better. That's actually a way to self-limit the intensity too, tempo work. It's hard as shit, so your internal intensity rating is very high, but the external load is lower. So it allows you to kind of, allows your tissues to heal while you're still getting a training response. But for sure, that's why variation is important, to just kind of break that loading cycle a little bit.
You ever use, like say someone has a very reduced capacity at the moment, like because of a joint injury.
Mm-hmm.
So knee injury or whatever, that's really precluding them from loading the squat much. You ever use like a stem unit, like a complex, to try and drive some muscle stimulus for that while also doing whatever type of light squatting they can do?
Yeah. So that exact example, I currently am not, but people do that. That's a viable, I think the narrative there is valid. So the idea would be because you have to load so lightly, mm-hmm. nothing you would be able to do with a barbell external load would be even give you that stimulus. So let's add that. I mean, I would say, I just don't know if it's strong enough to elicit anything. If you did that, I would definitely recommend, like when the eStim was going, you also consciously try to flex the same muscle, which probably sounds horrible. But I would do that.
I've used complex stem unit like in the same kind of protocols that Charlie Francis described with Ben Johnson. And in it, he talks about turning it up so high that Ben Johnson would bite down on a stick because of the pain of how
I think you would have to. If you really wanted a stimulus, that's the way you would have to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how Russian Stim got its name, is they would try to resist. They would do like isometric squats. They would put the electrodes on their quads. The quads would try to stand them up, and they would just try to fire their hamstrings to stay down, like, but turn it up as high as you possibly can. They started to just kind of realize that, well, just training and like regular training can kind of give you the same mm-hmm. response. But in an injury scenario, potentially, if you can't load, that's kind of the idea behind blood flow restriction training as well, where I think I would probably go that route because it's more systemic and the person's still kind of mm-hmm. doing the entirety of the muscle contraction. But I find it, you know, if we're manipulating variables like variation, tempo, range of motion, because you can cut range off too, you still get load. If we're taking all those variables into account, it's more rare that somebody, that we can't get a response of some, or like a stimulus of some sort. But that's the thing that's out there for sure. I would dust off my compacts for something like that before I would dust it off for the recovery aspect, mm-hmm. which has never made much sense to me. Like getting your muscles to fire more with electrodes to help recovery, it seems like that would just
What kind of things do you see now that are on the, I would say, the cutting edge or new research that you've read? Because I know you keep up with a lot of that. That's kind of like intriguing to you in the sense that, like, hey, here's some new modalities.
Anything you're buying stock on?
Honestly, no. Not in regards to modalities, like gadgets and these types of things that are trying to impart some type of like treatment. Nothing has caught my eye. All of the things that I would potentially be able to do, like there's this shockwave therapy for things like tendinopathy that's supposed to kind of break up some of the adhesions and fibrotic tissue.
Scar tissue.
A lot of this, and then
does it release the muscle?
Probably.
Is it glued up? Is it glued together? It's glued together.
The shockwave or the tendon?
Either.
Release.
Release.
It releases the muscle. That's all I know.
Releases.
It's all like pain. So most of the research on this stuff, any type of like passive modality, is it shows a decrease in pain perception.
Right.
There is no like structural change that's happening. So like, what is that synonymous with? Well, it could be very close to just placebo, which is powerful. It's like we should use placebo to our advantage, but everything has a placebo component. So if that's all something is doing, we might as well train. Mm-hmm. So the research that's catching my eye now is what we've already been talking about, is the importance of training load in regards to injury risk. So what they're trying to do is create ratios, acute to chronic workload ratios. So acute being defined as the work that you did in your last microcycle, so 7 to 10 days, whatever your last bout of acute work was, compared to your chronic work, which is like the average of the past month. So they're looking at a ratio of your acute work should be within some type of ratio to your chronic work. It's just a measure of preparation.
That's kind of cool.
The issue right now is all the literature is on like field sport athletes, like rugby, Australian rules football, soccer, which is like viable, but the cohort, it's just, we need more data. And some of the, it's a great concept, but we just need more research. But that's kind of piquing my interest. But the idea behind it is just like, what you're trying to do is level out the spikes in your training. So let's say you had an acute to chronic workload ratio of 4, meaning that you did 4 times the amount of work this week than you had averaged in the past month.
Than the average of the last 3 weeks.
3 or 4 weeks. Than the average of the last 3 or 4 weeks. So essentially, you quadrupled the amount of work that you had been averaging over the past month. So in a real life scenario, somebody last month was just not training very hard.
Right.
And for whatever reason, they decided to fucking go ham every single day this week. They're probably increasing their risk because they were not prepared for that acute burst in work. It can go the other way too. If you've chronically been training hard and your fitness level is very high, and then you have an entire month in which your load is very low, then your acute load is low, you've probably deconditioned, and so you want to avoid coming back and having that same spike. So that's the stuff that I'm interested in right now. The ratio, they actually do have a ratio for that cohort. It's like, I don't even want to say it because it's, people are going to write it down and use it as law for the different athletes and they coach and
just bleep it out.
It's like point, just to give you context though, they found what they were finding in these field sport athletes was anywhere from 80% to 130%. So an AC ratio of 0.8 to 1.3, and you were relatively safe in regards to injury risk. So what that would mean is this week I did 80% of my average of the past month.
I've been doing 10 sets, and now this week I did between 8 and 13. I'm okay?
Something like that. Yeah. Because what's the problem? Right. Like maybe this was a deload week, so I'm doing a little bit less compared to my average. Or maybe this is a week where I'm purposely overloading because I'm trying to push threshold. Like we need that too. So obviously the ratio should be over 100% at some point if we're trying to make progress. But they call that the sweet spot. And then beyond that, 150%, it was starting to kind of get into that yellow range, and then 2 and above. So basically, if you double your work this week compared to the average of the past month, your risk goes up. Doesn't mean you're going to get hurt. It just means that you're increasing your risk. I want those numbers to be validated with more studies, and I want them to be looked at in barbell sport athletes.
Yeah, that'd be really cool research, actually, especially for people that track.
I think it would be way easier in barbell sport athletes because the sport is so quantified.
Yeah, very, very straightforward.
It's a very cool concept, though.
Now, if there was any money in it and people cared, then there could probably be research.
There actually is. So one of the problems with the AC ratio research right now, and I'm saying this because I'm a fan of the main people who are doing it, but they have started to monetize it. And the field is kind of up in arms because they're taking these sort of questionable parameters of the 0.8, 1.3, calling it the sweet spot, and monetizing it in a way of like in the courses and kind of putting it out there like it's more validated than it is.
A sweet spot certification?
Yeah, well, kind of. And so people are eating it up because it's, people like numbers, they like ratios, and they like, it's a concept that makes so much sense.
And they love defined parameters.
Totally. Yeah. And they start like extrapolating it to everyone when it just can't be used like that. So it is making some money, and it's probably putting the cart before the horse a little bit, but I think the concept is a no-brainer. So right now, like I said, right now I think it's all retroactive. All I can do is look at somebody's training log and say, you are probably from week to week increasing a little too fast, and that's my hypothesis, and let's spread that out a little bit. It's the same concept. I'm just not giving them an exact ratio because I don't have that.
It is actually, even if you had no distinct numbers, it's a really good concept because you basically want to advise people in their training to not have any one significant acute workload that's so great, you know, in a week or whatever that it exceeds that. And
well, and in weightlifting is interesting because it's so, the training is much more varied than something like powerlifting per se. There's more movements.
Yeah.
And so like the question I would get, well, what if I only experience my symptoms during snatches or during squats, but not these other movements that I do in my weightlifting training? Do I need to just take down my entire training load? And my answer would be no. We can almost just kind of subset this to each movement. Like, what are your triggers first and foremost? Let's address those and keep everything else as normal
right.
as possible. But sometimes people just take time completely off because they're freaked, they're scared because they don't want to hurt anything.
Right.
Then that's probably working against them.
Right, right.
Well, great, man. I think we covered a lot of good stuff there. So where can people learn more from you, follow you, all those things?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd say my most popular videos are on your YouTube channel. So so your Juggernaut YouTube channel, Clinical Athlete's got a YouTube channel, I've got a YouTube channel. My Instagram, Quinn.Hennick, DPT, Clinical Athlete's Instagram. Same on Facebook, clinicalathlete.com. That's probably a good start.
You have a book.
I do have a book.
Yeah.
Weightlifting Movement Assessment and Optimization. WOMOW.
WOMOW.
Yeah, so it's all about optimizing position for the snatch and clean and jerk. So we break down each position of the lifts and offer strategies for motor skill acquisition, essentially, to learn the positions and to be able to practice and get better at them so that you can then get strong at them.
Clinical weightlifting certification. Yeah, I said it at our seminars all the time that the breathing drills in particular, but a lot of the stuff that you've shown me, I think is the most important things I've learned about training in the last, you know, almost 10 years that I've been running Juggernaut. Helped me feel better after the disc injuries, helped me perform better, helped me be a better coach. So even if you're a big, tough powerlifter and you think that all this, you know, physical therapy, this stuff is some pussy bullshit.
Well, pain's, you know, in your mind, so it is.
Yeah, I once felt the same way. And then 3 months later, I had several herniated discs, and I was like, so, Quinn, tell me about that pussy PT bullshit that you were mentioning before.
Appreciate you. Pussy. Yeah. Got your back.
Yeah, that was a backhanded compliment if I've ever given one.
You can find me on Instagram, max_ada, on Facebook, or email me at max@gtsstrength.com.
Is that only one underscore?
Only one.
That's lucky.
What? How many are you supposed to have?
I don't know. Some people have like 10.
Well, underscore, max_ada_IFBB.
Underscore, potential.
It's a new word. I could be a pro. I'm about 28 weeks out from junior nats right now.
underscore fit chick. underscore inspo.
Girls who squat.
Subscribe to the Juggernaut YouTube channel. Multiple videos a week from smart people like us and a couple other people from time to time. check out jtsstrength.com for all of our online coaching offerings, particularly our powerlifting AI coaching. It's basically taking the world over. So, you know, get in now, still at the beta price until early 2019 when it goes to the mobile app. So we're really excited about that. Yeah, books, we got all kind of stuff like that on there. Subscribe to the channel, subscribe to the podcast, 5-star review on iTunes. Write us something funny or nice so more people can find the podcast. And follow me at Chad Wesley Smith and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.